Facebook wants to block sites that use their data for surveillance. Intel steps up their autonomous driving game. The founder of DuckDuckGo is here to show us how to browse more privately. And Google shows off a smart jacket when what I really wanted was smart pants. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1723, recorded Monday, March 13th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you every last thing you need to know about technology. Every last thing. I'm Megan Maroney.
We don't leave any detail on the back burner page two or under the fold.
Or any else of those places.
Yes, I'm sure there are more that I came up with. I'm Jason Howell, by the
way. Yes, if it's something that we don't mention, you don't need to know it.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Every once in a while we forget something. At least I can speak for myself. I'm a very forgetful person, so I apologize in advance for the thing I'm going to forget in this first story. Hopefully I don't, though. Last October, the ACLU went public with information showing how Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram were providing user data to a social media monitoring company called Geofedia. We talked about it on the show. That was ultimately used to track protesters and political activists by law enforcement, taking that social data and then tracking it. Facebook says it has now updated its developer rules for both Facebook and Instagram to prohibit that data from being used as ammo for surveillance tools. Facebook says its policies already actually prohibited this, but it really wants to make sure the policy is even more explicit to just make sure that there's a better understanding of those limitations for developers. And I think also to assure users of its stance, kind of get that back out into the press again and say, we don't like that this was happening. We're not going to allow for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is that weird place of like, of course, anyone who's on Facebook, anyone who's on Twitter, we're constantly offering up all kinds of bits of our lives, all kinds of personal information that taken in aggregate could create a full picture of someone. And then again, we say over and over again, but I didn't do anything, you know, but anything includes a lot of protesting. Like that's what they were really, they were looking at people who used the hashtag Black Lives Matter. They were looking at people who were in certain places at certain times, and they were really targeting those people in that way. And Facebook said, you know, you can't use our data like that. But, you know, it's like, we're still offering up all of that data. And if someone already has an idea to target you, they're going to be able to find it that way. But I like that Facebook and Twitter have done this.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook's actually working really closely with the ACLU. I guess the ACLU had shown Facebook a number of times where its data was being used in ways similar to this, fueling intelligence gathering on the back end. In each of those instances, Facebook revoked data access when they learned about that. And yeah, I mean, this is, I think, the right direction for Facebook. And they're doing it for both of their services. I'm trying to think about where Twitter stands on this. I mean, Twitter might be a little bit more difficult because they're even more than Facebook and Instagram. Their information is so much more public that I'm sure that there's a certain level of things, you know, as far as this is concerned, that might be a little bit harder to crack down on. But when you're talking about the actual fire hose from Twitter, they have control over that. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they've come out and said, like, we don't want Geofedia or anyone else to use our data like this for surveillance for that. But that's against their terms of service. They've also said that. But I mean, it really makes you think about, you know, because I went to the Women's March. My daughter went to the Women's March. Like, that location is recorded in places like our, you know, we used maps. We both had iPhones like that. Actually, I had your Google Pixel. She had an iPhone. But, you know, that information is somewhere. And we don't know in 10 years or 20 years, you know, like, say, you know, she's 14 now. Say say she wants to run for office and that information is safe somewhere. Right. Like, hey, she was at that women's march, which that was, you know, angry protesters. That was, you know, that was violent. That was all those things that I know it not to be, but history might somehow fake news it into the truth. And, you know, then she's, you know, not permitted to run for office, or, you know, maybe it's something that you can, it's terrifying when you think about it. So this is one small step, but you know, there's a lot to worry about when you think about all the data that we're you know, sending into the ether, and that is saved in the cloud somewhere, and who's going to use it at a later date.
Yeah, absolutely. Apparently the ACLU is holding a panel at South by Southwest today, by the way, South by Southwest, underway for a little bit now, but anyways, today they're holding a panel that's all about this topic, about social media and surveillance and how it all intertwines. And yeah, the point that you make, I think, is one that sometimes gets lost. Sometimes when people see this, they do fall back on that very repeated, you know, phrase of, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so what do I care? Blah, blah, blah. But it's not always necessarily about just that either, right? Like, it is the long tail of that information. You never know the state of the world 10, 20 years down the line, and how something that could have seemed so innocent 20 years ago could take on a new life 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. Well, more singles in the driverless car dating game are pairing up. Intel just bought Israeli computer vision tech company Mobileye for $15.3 billion. This will make Intel a real player in the race to get autonomous cars on the road. And it will cement its place in an industry that Intel CEO says will be worth about $70 billion by 2030. TechCrunch says Mobileye is a leader in sensor fusion, mapping front and rear, facing camera tech, and they will begin crowdsourcing data for high-definition maps in 2018. So this was big news. You know, they're obviously Intel was huge in the PC market, which is not as big of a market now, but the one market that's really growing still and you know, still has room for new players is this autonomous driving technology. So it's good that they're getting in there with Mobileye.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what this is all about, right? Like, all the big name companies right now are investing heavily in autonomous vehicles and in the technology that's behind that. I mean, it's almost like at this kind of point in technology, we are in some ways where we were, you know, 9-10 years ago with smartphones and the big boom that was happening there. And everyone, you know, began investing heavily in smartphone technology, realizing that this is the next big thing for the next, you know, however long. We've got autonomous vehicles, we've got artificial intelligence, and these companies are just flocking and paying ridiculous amounts to make sure that they have super valuable IP heading into that phase. And not to mention, Intel really, you know, I think feels like it needs to diversify their options. So getting into another platform in this way with, I mean, that's a pretty huge, I think this might be one of the biggest dollar amounts for an acquisition this year so far. But getting into this now is good for the longevity of their core business, and mm-hmm. potentially protects them on the chip side if things, you know, happen to slow down there.
Right. They want to get in there before Qualcomm. Like, mm-hmm. they want to get in front of Qualcomm. And Mobileye also, you know, had a partnership with Tesla,
right?
Which they broke up. That broke up of last fall. I love comparing these. They're all couples. They're that's how I see it. It's all just like one big romantic.
They're all
soap
hooking
opera.
Up with each other.
Autonomous car soap opera.
And meanwhile, George Hotz is like, oh man,
yeah,
it just never works out for me. He's the one that said that he really wanted to crush mm-hmm. Mobileye, and that Mobileye's technology was nothing compared to what he was working on with Comma mm-hmm. AI. And that, apparently, Mobileye was worth something, because mm-hmm. that's a huge acquisition for the company.
Yeah, exactly.
Now is Pandora's time to shine in the big leagues. Of course, Pandora has been around longer than almost every one of the music streaming big leagues, and right nowadays anyways. But it's one of the last music services to launch its on-demand streaming service to users. Pandora Premium takes all of the familiar aspects of Pandora's traditional service and adds in the ability to pick and choose albums and songs at will from their library, as you would come to expect with our, you know, modern day music streaming services. Premium emphasizes recommendations that are based on listening habits, listening history, as well as thumbs up history to free users for creating playlists. So all of those people that have been using Pandora for years and years, thumbs upping all over the place, That's going to be kind of core, a vital part of how this service operates based on that, those signals, that information. Pandora Premium costs $10 per month, as they all do, and we'll begin to roll out starting Wednesday on an invitation-only basis at first.
So I feel as if I was the last person to pay for Pandora, yeah. And I just stopped about 1 month ago.
I mean, like, it wasn't too long ago that you were like, Pandora is
my jam.
It's my jam.
Pandora is my jam. And I said that just like an old person would say that.
You may have also gone.
I might have said that. Yeah. So I don't like creating playlists. Like, it just is, seems arduous to me to go through and pick all the songs. And I like to just, show me what you can show me, Pandora. And because I used it for so long, because I thumbed up so many.
I don't know.
I really want to verbify that. I've given so many thumbs up to songs that it knew me. It really just got me. Yeah. And Apple Music doesn't. I try to make like a radio station of certain songs that I like. And it's like, I kind of like the music, but it's not like Pandora. But I just got sick of paying for it because I also pay for Apple Music.
Right.
You know, everyone in my family would prefer to use Apple Music. And, you know, we have a family plan. So, but I don't know, because this sounds good to me. I know everyone says like, oh, too little, too late, Pandora, but they have smart playlists. So like, you can hit thumbs up a few times and it just creates a playlist for you. Mm-hmm. I like that idea, but I think I'm just stuck with Apple Music, pay my, $15 a month and be done with it for family account.
And if Pandora can't win you over, then I'm a little afraid for Pandora. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, yes, they are late to this game. And I think at this point, a lot of people, many people who already have a streaming service, like, they've kind of set their, they've drawn their line in the sand as far as which service works for them. They're all very similar, but they all have their own individual strengths. Yet everybody is very passionate about their choice for the most part. Many people love Spotify. I'm a big fan of Google Play Music for a number of reasons. There's a lot of, feature parity, but it would be a lot for me to step away from even Play Music to Spotify based on where I'm at right now, even though I know Spotify is really great for a number of reasons, let alone go to, Pandora. I don't know why I would do that because, Play Music also has a really good kind of like recommendation engine. I don't know how it compares to Pandora, though, because my Pandora habit is so far in the past in history. I stopped the Pandora thing a long time ago.
Yeah, so playing a bunch of music from 2008.
Yeah, right. You're like, what were you into in 2005? it's all right music, but hey, tastes evolve. But I'll be curious to see kind of how this stacks up. They're also going to roll in eventually a feature from RDO because they had acquired RDO a year or two ago, a couple of years ago. Autoplay feature, which basically once you get to the end of a playlist or whatever, it would take the information, your listening habits coupled with the genre and information from that particular album and continue playing other recommended things. So it's not like music just stops. And that actually sounds like a pretty great feature because. Sometimes you don't want the music to stop.
Yeah, the music should never stop.
Never.
The music should never die. So I don't know about you, Jason, but I was feeling very smarmy about my Twitter following until I read that 15% of all active Twitter accounts are bots. That means they're not real people. The study from Indiana University and University of Southern California finds that there are 48 million social bots. Those are accounts controlled by software that generate content and establish interactions algorithmically. Though most of these bots are designed to harass, spam, or artificially influence certain groups by automatically retweeting and liking, some bots are also beneficial, like those used for customer service or designed to alert people of natural disasters. So this study is not so great for Twitter, who's trying to prove their worth on their daily active users. If they're robots, periodically, in my experience, are not that good for advertisers. Advertisers don't really want to advertise to bots yet.
Mixed signals. You don't really know what you're paying for.
Mm-hmm. And the ability to influence big political groups. And that's what I think this study was trying to point out.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems to confirm suspicions that I've had as far as like, okay, how many of these replies or these, the large number of likes on something strange, how much of that is real? How much of it is fake? Is AI to the point to where I can have an interaction on Twitter and truly not know that I'm conversing with a robot? That's a big challenge for social media. And I know that there are bots on other platforms, Facebook, there are bots on Facebook, but on Twitter, it's next to impossible to know when you look at a profile, if that is in fact a bot, you know, behind the profile. On Facebook, at least there's a little bit of kind of like a real identity aspect to it that, you know, maybe that's false, you know, maybe that's just tricking you into having more confidence in what you're seeing. I don't know. But I feel like it's a big problem for Twitter, especially in the, yeah, like what you say, in the idea of kind of like political influence. If Twitter has become a major, and it has in many ways, a major political tool, and a lot of that influence is visible, you know, you see that through likes and retweets and all that kind of stuff. This can really, I mean, having an army of bots to back or refute something in large numbers can really influence an even greater number of people. It's a really great propaganda tool.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. If you're thinking about a world where we, like, we're talking about, like, what do the people want? What do they really want? You know, if you're saying like, oh, well, somebody tweeted something about how great, you know, the new Affordable Care Act is, and 3 billion people retweeted it. That's amazing. People must really love this Affordable Care Act. And it's like, mm-hmm. No, like, that's a lot of bots. And it's, I don't know. It's frustrating. I think Kashmir Hill had a really interesting Twitter post. She, from Fusion, she went on maternity leave, and she said, like, she was gone for 3 months and she doubled her followers or something. She didn't post anything. Like, she was just gone from Twitter. She said, what's going on here? And I think it's like, she's a person that has a certain amount of followers. And once you have a certain amount of followers, like, bots will, you know, follow that for whatever reason they have, you know, to
right. Yeah.
Whatever reason it is, to spam her, to harass her, like, to retweet what she's says for good reasons, who knows. Mm-hmm. But it really, I mean, when you talk about what the people want, like, I hope that we remember that people are people, and Twitter,
and why should it be
yes, why should know? It be
seriously
thank you
I should also say that I think I figured out our million-dollar idea.
What is
a
it?
A social network that is nothing but robots. And yes. You could see, like, if they're all programmed with different types of AI, it's kind of like putting an Amazon Echo and a Google Home in the same room and mm-hmm. having them talk back to each other, but a full social network.
Right, and we shall rule it.
Yes, and we arm the robots with money that they can pay for us to access the service. See? Mm-hmm.
Love
there
it.
We go. Google's 20% project strikes again. This time, the company's Area 120 incubator is launching a new iOS app called Uptime that allows users to watch YouTube videos together while reacting and commenting in real time. Certain interactions like comments and sparkles will be seen by other live viewers during the live viewing, shared viewing, while reactions like emoji and hearts will be included. You'll see it live, but then it'll also be included after the fact with the linked video and attributed to the user that did them, you know, once viewing is complete. So your friends go on, they can see your reactions when they watch that video later, if you had, you know, put a smiley face on it or something. I don't know. Is this... Do you need this
yes,
in your life?
I do need it in my yeah. life. We had a discussion about this. You didn't seem that interested. And I said, well, because I was trying to make you jealous when an app is only on iOS mm-hmm. and not yeah. on Android.
There's a little bit
and
of that.
Then mm-hmm. you were like, why would you want this? I enjoy, I think I've said before that I often sit on our living room couch and watch YouTube with the family. It's fun.
Does everyone gather around you or are you watching it on the TV?
No, on the TV, on the Apple TV.
Okay.
We don't just like browse through YouTube. Although I mean, that's how we watch Saturday Night Live skits and stuff.
Okay.
But you know, we also have that app that I've told you about that just picks like 5 sciencey videos every day that you can watch. Hyper mm-hmm. is the app. But I also, my kids, like, they spend a lot of time watching YouTube. My boys are 11 and they probably spend like, yeah, they now, it's like no more Minecraft, no more Kerbal Space. It's like 95% YouTube. And so they find these videos and they'll like follow me around saying like, you gotta watch this. So, I mean, I can imagine watching, it's more fun to watch silly videos together and see yeah. people's true. Reaction. I also think this might have a good use for parents who want to keep up with what their kids are watching mm-hmm. on YouTube. Because FYI, it's very easy to pause the viewing history in YouTube. So if you are trying to keep up with your kids by like looking through their viewing history, I won't tell you how I know this.
I know somebody told me
that it is extremely easy to pause the viewing history. So don't rely on that if you want to make sure your kids aren't, I don't know, watching videos of surgery. I don't know why anyone would do that except for my children.
Or worse. yeah, I'm not quite there yet with my kids. So maybe this will make sense for me if it ever really moves beyond the kind of experimental point that it is right now. It's a 20% project. They only made it for iOS. And, you know, there's no indication that it would come to Android unless I imagine it really took off and became super popular. Maybe some of these features end up getting folded into YouTube proper if there's a strong reaction around like, oh, this would be really great to have. Because there are a lot of elements that actually really remind me of other live streaming like Facebook Live or Periscope, you know, the on-screen reactions tied to things that you're watching and everything. So maybe they fold that in, but
I think Burke knows why that's...
It's all about the... You meant sparkles, right?
Sparkles, yeah.
Or is it sparks?
Sparkles.
Both work. It's okay. It's okay, bro.
Bruh. What are sparkles? Just like sending sparkles.
Yeah, which in anything that I read, it didn't really explain that other than that, like when you're watching a video, you can send sparkles. This is where I realized like a service like this is kind of lost on me. I don't know why I'd send sparkles, but there you go.
Like
you
it's can, like, don't so you ever do. Throw glitter at each other? Like
no, because then I have to clean it up. That definitely does not happen.
Okay, good. After the break, the founder of the private browser DuckDuckGo is here to tell us how to avoid being tracked while browsing. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system that's designed for entrepreneurs. Let me tell you how Grasshopper works. It works just like your old-fashioned traditional phone system, but you don't have to purchase any new hardware. They have an iOS and an Android app, and then a caller who wants to reach your business can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone, but you don't have to give them your mobile phone number. It's a separate number. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number, and that way you can maintain your brand and keep it, of course, separate and private from your regular cell phone number. Whenever you make a call, your client will automatically see your Grasshopper caller ID, not your personal phone number. All you have to do is select a toll-free or a local number, record a custom greeting, say whatever you want, and then add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing, and they also make your business sound more professional. You can set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. So you can use Grasshopper with your employees. So same thing. They don't have to share their personal numbers. That you can just see your business number and their business extension. You can get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. And you can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. Join over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month. And you can try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support. So last week, the headline screamed that the CIA had broken encryption on WhatsApp and Signal. That turned out to be not so true. And who cares anyway? Because it's a new week and we've all forgotten about WikiLeaks. But you know who hasn't forgotten about helping people protect their privacy? Gabriel Weinberg, founder of DuckDuckGo. Welcome to the show, Gabriel.
Hello, my pleasure.
So you started DuckDuckGo in 2008, which was long before the Snowden revelations. Tell us a little bit about what it is and what made you decide to start it.
Sure. So DuckDuckGo is a search engine, and we don't track you. So we're like Google, except that when you search on DuckDuckGo, you're completely anonymous. And yeah, I started it a long time ago in tech years now, about a decade ago. Originally, just I was actually fed up with Google results for different reasons. Back in 2008, if you remember, there was a lot of spam in the results, and they lacked instant answers. And so we got ahead on both of those fronts. But after I released it, I started really investigating search privacy and really realized that, A, you actually don't need to track people to make money in web search. You can make money just based on the keywords that they type in. And Google is an advertising network, so they need to track you across the whole web. Like you were talking about YouTube earlier. That's why you keep seeing the same, you know, YouTube ads following you around after you did some searches. Whereas on DuckDuckGo, we just run a search engine. We don't run an advertising network. And so we can run search results without tracking you at all. And that's just a better user experience.
So you recommend, we found you because you had some tips on privacy on your iPhone. One of the things that you recommend is resetting your advertising identifier from time to time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so DuckDuckGo is actually built into the iPhone, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we put the list together, because the iPhone takes the privacy pretty seriously, as, you know, everyone knows from the Apple FBI case last year. But to answer your question specifically, they have an advertiser identifier that's built into the iPhone that lets apps, how they kind of track you across apps, advertising networks. And you can actually reset this if you go into, you're showing on the screen now, if you go into a particular part of the settings, you can reset it as much as you want. Now, what's really interesting is that, and the reason you might want to do that is not just to get people to stop from tracking you, but actually that, there's another setting called limit ad tracking, and that's actually it's voluntary from the app provider whether they're going to honor that or not. And so to get around that kind of voluntary system, you want to keep resetting that advertiser identifier.
So everything around search, you know, we're so used to the Google, Yahoo, whatever model, which is, as you were saying just a few minutes ago, based around advertising largely and around tracking user behavior and monetizing that through advertising. DuckDuckGo, of course, doesn't do advertising that way. How do you make it worth it for you as a business? Like, how do you end up monetizing the service that way?
Yeah, so DuckDuckGo is actually profitable. We've been profitable for several years. We actually syndicate Yahoo and Microsoft advertising. What people don't realize is even on Google, they make most of their money off the search engine itself, just based on the keyword you type in. So you type in mortgage, you get a mortgage ad. And so it's really a myth that anyone needs to track you to make money in web search. It's the lucrative place because of that search intent. Really, all that tracking is because of all these other, you know, ad networks that Google runs, you know, AdSense and AdMob. A recent study showed from Princeton looked at the top million websites and apps and found Google trackers on 75% of them. And so it really is just people think it's about the search engine, but it really has nothing to do with the search engine.
So you don't track any. So if I use DuckDuckGo, what information, like, what are my privacy expectations? Like, do you take any information from me at all?
No, zero information. We have no account. We throw away IP addresses. And so really every time you search on DuckDuckGo, it's like you've never been there before from our perspective. You're completely anonymous.
And the same goes for DuckDuckGo on mobile and the iPhone app or the Android app?
That's right. You can use our apps on mobile. We're also actually built in as a search engine option on the iPhone. So if you actually go to the search engine settings for Safari, we're one of the four providers there in the U.S.
So, I mean, DuckDuckGo has a great, great reputation when it comes to, you know, being trustworthy around privacy. I mean, obviously, that's the specialty of what you do with your search engine. There are a lot of services, there are a lot of sites, a lot of VPNs, for example, that all claim that they are respecting privacy of users, but it's really kind of impossible for a user to truly know. I mean, that's got to be one of the biggest challenges for you guys is building up that trust. How did you attack that?
Yeah, I think you build trust with transparency and being a thought leader in the space. And then there's also, you know, being around for a long time, and then where you are with your privacy policy. So, you know, we have a very explicit and clear privacy policy. And time again, if you're found to violate that, especially in the U.S., you can get in big trouble. And if you're intentionally kind of misleading about it, you can ultimately get into serious penalties. And so with all that behind us, we've built a lot of trust. You know, we, part of the reason you found us with our iPhone tips, we have a blog called spreadprivacy.com where we're out there just trying to help people protect their privacy and kind of wade through all that noise that you're kind of referring to there. And so we're out there trying to, like, you know, help identify the best things for you to download.
So there's some people in our chat room discussing incognito mode on Chrome. And it's nice that you talk about transparency, because one of the people in our chat room who was talking about this just said they were part of the DuckDuckGo staff. So thank you for that. Very transparent. So I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the difference between incognito mode on Chrome and DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, this is another one of these myths that we have a blog post on spreadpiracy.com. We actually ran a survey with about 5,000 Americans, and 75%, I think 77%, overestimated the privacy they're getting from incognito mode. People think that when you go incognito, you're somehow anonymous, but in reality, it's just actually blocking stuff off of your local computer. All the sites that you visit, including Google, can still be tracking you, saving all your searches. Your ISP can still see where you go. It really is just your local computer. And so some of the misconceptions people have about private browsing mode is that their searches will not be saved or seen by their ISP or search engine. It's simply not the case. So if you really want to be anonymous, you actually have to kind of use services that don't track you or add another layer on top, you know, like a VPN or Tor.
I imagine you probably feel pretty strongly about this one. Shouldn't all search engines be privacy focused? I mean, it really seems like this in this day and age, information can be weaponized so easily. There's a lot for people to lose. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, you know, people have gotten a little more nuanced about what they share on social media, but they're still not really thinking about their search privacy as much, like even though you're typing kind of your medical and financial problems directly into your search engine. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were kind of ahead in a lot of these areas, especially on encryption. And over time, you know, the search engines adopted encryption kind of like we did early on. Now we're really pushing for, you know, private browsing modes in particular to at least adopt a no tracking search engine, because I think it's, the whole mode is misleading to people, as we just talked about. So that would be the next logical step, from my opinion, is when you offer someone a private option to make sure it's actually totally private.
So I read a piece in Wired, in the UK Wired last month, where you said you were interviewed and you said that you maybe were expanding beyond browsing. You didn't give any details about what you might be expanding to, but do you care to share anything now?
Not breaking any news for you, but the big idea is that when you click on a search result now, even though you're anonymous on DuckDuckGo, you know, you're going off to these other sites where you're less anonymous. And so we offer or suggest that you download additional add-ons to protect you. But we'd really like to be more of that solution for you. What we've really found is most people want privacy. They want to have less of a digital footprint online, but they just don't know how to get it. And they don't want a lot of sacrifice. They want it simple and easy. And so we want to give that to them. We're giving that in search right now, but we want to make it more of their whole browsing experience.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Gabriel Weinberg is the founder of DuckDuckGo. Where can people follow your work online?
You can follow us at DuckDuckGo on Twitter. I'm at Yegg, Y-E-G-G. And then the blog I mentioned is spreadprivacy.com.
All right. Thanks Fantastic. So much.
Thank you, Gabriel. Have a great night.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. All right. Feedback time. Marlon writes about an ongoing discussion that we've had, been having about high fidelity streaming services. He says someone wrote in about the bitrate of Google Music being too low, 192K kilobits per second, to be exact. The option of higher bitrate is located in settings, excuse me, on iPhone and Android. The setting is only for streaming over mobile networks, not Wi-Fi. And I believe they have or are implementing the settings for Wi-Fi in a later update. Before, if you were on Wi-Fi, the bitrate stream would fluctuate depending on bandwidth of your home network, same as how YouTube would automatically change quality depending on your network speeds. And by the way, Google Play does support most lossless files, but he says, I believe, only if you load it into the phone manually. And I've been doing some searches around. Like I see most of the services right now stream at around 320 kilobits per second. So I'm actually kind of guessing but nothing from Google directly on this, but I'm guessing that their probably streaming rate, if you're connected to Wi-Fi, is probably let it all through, and it's probably 320 kilobits per second, which is going to be plenty for most people. That's you know, that's double the quality of the standard 192. So,
and when you listen to music on your phone, is it all streaming? Like, do you have music files that you know, were your own music that you upload manually?
No, I don't really do that. I mean, there's a lot of people that enjoy having something like a micro SD card slot for exactly that. They can just throw all of their lossless audio files on there, and you know, and it's almost like a disc that you're just swapping into your phone. But a lot of phones don't do that now. I mean, I don't really feel the need personally. When I'm in mobile, I'm in a different environment. I'm happy to kind of take a little bit of that quality cut because I'm just at the gym or something. You know what I mean? But if I sit down or if I'm at home listening to music, I might want a little bit more of an improvement, and you can get that in other ways.
Yeah. Right. So when you're at home listening on your hi-fi.
Yeah, exactly. If I had a hi-fi, which I don't. coming up, Google's tight fit and wearable contest. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals for less than $10 per person. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Really quick, actually. Not all ingredients are created equal, so it's important to know where your food comes from. And Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. So seafood sourced sustainably, beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals, produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming, and by shipping the exact amount of every ingredient that's required for a recipe, Blue Apron's reducing food waste. It also makes making those recipes a whole lot easier. The freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. You can customize your recipes every week, so you can go in there each week and determine which ones you're going to get, and based on your dietary preferences, kind of craft it around that. You can choose from a variety of new recipes every week. Or if you just kind of want to let it fly, let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you, you can do that. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. There's all different types of recipes to choose from and to take a look at. Salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. It's all super delicious. Check it out for yourself. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/TNT and check it out for yourself. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
TNT's fan of the day is Paul Bueno on Twitter, who says, love running my daily 5K while watching tech news today. I am impressed with
daily Paul. 5K.
Yes. There he is on the treadmill, so he can watch and run. Take a lesson from Paul.
We are the carrot that is being dangled in front of him as he runs.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, on the days that, like, sometimes the show, like, it's like 50 minutes. Sometimes it's 30 minutes. What, like, does he get to run slower or faster? Depending?
Yeah. Does that inform the treadmill how fast it's going to move?
Let's talk
faster. Like, oh, it's a short show. It's going to move like twice as fast.
Yes. We'll be thinking about you, Paul, and adjusting our speed.
Yeah. Let's slow it down a little bit. Paul needs a little bit of a break. Mm-hmm.
So record a video of yourself, take a picture of your setup, post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
All right. There's wearables, like, you know, little smartwatches that you wear on your wrist or little face computer. And then there's wearables like a technology-infused Levi jacket where the denim fabric is actually conductive. Levi's commuter trucker jacket, which was first scheduled to arrive this spring, now actually has a fall release. So we're going to have to wait a little bit longer to spend $350 on this Levi's jacket. This will be the first commercial product to emerge from Google's experimental ATAP division under Project Jacquard, which Project Jacquard is based entirely around this whole conductive fabric idea. And this is one way to illustrate it. It's actually weaving conductive materials into the fabric so that it's, you know, you end up with a jacket that looks like a jacket, not a tech toy.
Yeah, so this very smart jacket is being worn by a not-so-very-smart man not wearing a helmet.
I know.
on the bike. And also, I don't know if it's really safe to ride a bike in San Francisco with earbuds. Like, I don't think that is safe. But
I think a lot of people probably do it.
I'm sure people do it. Yeah. He also doesn't lock his bike correctly, as you can see. Like, he'll just take the wheel off of there.
But what about the jacket?
Okay, and what about the jacket? The jacket is fantastic. I want one, but I really wanted smart pants. Like, when we heard about Project Jacquard, I wanted smart pants because it's fun to say smart pants, and I wanted to just, like, slap myself on the butt.
Smarty pants.
And do something.
Call it Smarty Pants.
Yeah, smarty pants.
You know, TM.
Burke is asked if we could take the Burke cam for a second. He has a really good question, Burke. Didn't you see the video? He was like dismissing calls and he was getting directions and
yeah. So it syncs up with an app on your phone that they're actually saying based on what I read that the product is delayed not because of the jacket itself but because the app is not fully hashed out. But essentially, it's a big kind of panel on the sleeve that has all this conductive fabric there, and you can determine what different gestures do on it to like launch different things or skip forward on whatever music you're listening to or give you like a traffic update, stuff like that. So you can kind of programming what those gestures actually do.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool to do that on your jacket too. It's just cool.
It's just like forward, forward, forward. Oh, no, back, forward. Yeah. It could end up looking kind of obscene. So be careful. You don't want the drivers on the road to think you're throwing them a signal.
Because they'll run you over and you're not wearing a helmet and you have earbuds. Exactly. You can't hear them.
You're a moving target, but not too difficult for the drivers in San Francisco. I don't know. Would this keep you out of your screens? You know, the screens that you're always looking at? Does this pull you away? Do you think a $350 jacket is the right approach for that?
Okay. So you always need to have the earbuds in to know anything? Like it talks to your earbuds?
I think through your phone. You know, it's kind of like controlling aspects of your phone, but your phone is probably Bluetooth to your earbuds.
Right. Because like my Apple Watch does keep me away from my screen a lot, but it has a screen. So I can see what it's saying. Oh, that's a notification. You know, Jason's just, texted me. I don't need that.
Right. I don't need to read that. Yeah.
So, but then how would I get any notification except for if I were wearing earbuds? And then you have earbuds. So I don't know. You're not like having, like, I wouldn't want to be like having a conversation with someone with earbuds on and then have them wondering what information they're getting in their earbuds.
Yeah. I don't know. It sounds interesting. The technology is very cool. I remain how many people are going to buy this? Are really a lot of people going to spend $350 on this jacket?
Probably
that's the question that I have.
It's a
nice looking jacket. It's a nice looking jacket. Stylish. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, lots of people pay $350 for jackets that are dumb.
Are Levi jackets normally $350?
I don't know.
Really
like high fashion
Levi jackets.
High fashion jackets sometimes cost $350. Okay. I don't buy them, but I know there are people that do.
Okay, well, then it might have somewhat of an audience. Remains to be seen. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
You need to subscribe to the show.
You really do.
You need to get it right away before anyone else does. Get it, you know, then you'll know if you need the smart jacket or not. Find out all the ways at twit.tv/TNT. Come see us in person. We love having a live audience. Just email tickets@twit.tv. Let us know when you're coming and we'll put the most comfortable chair out just for you. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Brian for pushing buttons and keep the video on track. Thanks to Burke for pushing buttons here in the studio and writing things occasionally, keeping us on track. And Brian, thanks to you again, because I heard that you're editing the show today. Actually,
thanks,
Megan
guys.
Reminded me.
Yeah.
Because I never remember. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Woo-hoo.